We in general, in this particular slot, try to speak about areas of Torah that are not covered as regularly in the normal yeshiva limud. So we've had over the last 10 or so plus years the opportunity to most of the time switch between topics in Zrum and topics in Taros. We have been a couple year break with some Ribbis and some Avodas HaKarbanos. But we're going back to a little bit of discussion of Taros. Let me explain what we plan on doing and why we plan on doing it. Hopefully that can be effective and clear. In general, part of the mitzvah d'oraisa, apparently, to know of mastering Torah, so as the Shechter often points out, that the Alter Rebbe of Chabad, Shemarach Harav, points out that a person has an obligation to go through Shas. So being that Taros is 1/6 of Shas, this would seem to be a good opportunity to at least familiarize ourselves a little bit. In general, the goal of the Shiurim is, first of all, to give us some basic information and topics that we would not encounter the same way, and also just to make us like a little bit less scared of these topics. And a person, when they go through Gemara, and something comes up in the world of Zrum, Kachem, or Taros, it can be a little bit daunting, can be a little bit overwhelming, and part of the goal is just to almost normalize it and give us the confidence that when these things come up, that we'll be able to be in a fairly good place. This, I believe, is the fifth time in these Shiurim that we're learning sugyas relating to Taros. What we're doing is going to be a little bit specific in the following way. The Gemara in the end of the first parak of Masechet Pesachim deals at length with sugyas that relate to Tumah and Tahara. That's a really sort of the last section of the Gemara in the first parak of Pesachim. Those sugyas, like the Bavli in general, assumes a degree of background knowledge. It assumes that we are familiar with a variety of things relating to the realm of Tumah and Tahara. My goal in these Shiurim is not really to speak about those Gemaras as much, but really to speak about sort of sugyas that are basic to the world of Taros, that are going to be helpful to know to be able to make your way through the first parak of Masechet Pesachim. So we're not going to be reading Gemaras as much as Masechet Pesachim, but we're going to get some of the background topics that will be helpful, hopefully, for us in our ability, those of us that are going to be learning Pesachim and want to finish Pesachim, they're going to be able to finish those sugyas of Taros, that will be able to understand what's going on there, at least in a little bit of a better way. In that sense, we'll speak about, I have a list on my computer, but we'll definitely try to get some more, just basic sugyas and Taros that are relevant to what comes up in those sugyas in Masechet Pesachim. It's a little bit different than, I think, 10 years ago when we had Hakdama to Taros. We worked a little bit more off the Rambam's Hakdama, but this hopefully can be beneficial. It can stand on its own. If you don't learn those Gemaras, it certainly can be beneficial and helpful. What I want to do tonight is to really do two things. One is a brief Hakdama to the world of learning about Taros. And then I want to speak about, really from a perspective, a little bit of Machshava, just what is Tumah and Tahara? What exactly is Tumah? That's more of a Hakdama than what will come up per se in the world of Pesachim and Taros, but I think it's important. Let's begin like this as far as learning Taros. Torah tells us in Parsha Shoftim, that if a person has a question, so the Torah tells us they have a question in three areas. Have a question about Bein Dam Ladam, a question about blood, Bein Din Ladin, a question about Din, of judgment, and Bein Nega, and Bein Nega Lenega. Very famously, the Gra in Aderes Eliyahu points out, the Torah here is highlighting for us there are three main areas of Torah. Bein Dam Ladam, the Aderes Eliyahu assumes, is a reference to the world of Nida or the world of Isser, that there's Isurim. In the world of Isurim, so the question we ask is something Mutter or something Aser? Is it permitted or not? In the realm of Isurim, we say Savak Dorais L'chumra, Savak Dorabanam L'kula. That's one area of Torah. The second area of Torah, being Din L'din, is the world of Dine Mamonos. In the world of Dine Mamonos, there's a suffix, so there we say things like Hamote Mechavero Alav Haraya. We say different things, but there's a doubt in the case of Mamonos. We're dealing with a monetary dispute. We ask questions like, is the person chayef to pay? Is the person putter from paying? Is the person obligated to reimburse? Is he not obligated to reimburse? That's the second area of Torah. So we have questions about Isser. We have questions about monetary law. There is a third section referred to here in part of Shoftim, Bein Nega Lenega. What is Bein Nega Lenega? That's a reference to the world of Tumah V'Tahara. The Tumah V'Tahara seems to be a third area. So we speak about Torah as a whole, much as the Tosefta says, Kol Torah Kula Inyan Echadu, that all of Torah is interconnected. There appear to be really three different main sections, parentheses. Kachem may also be different, even the Fuzz may be different. These are three main areas that may be different. But Shechter points out in Eretz HaTzvi, in Siman Beis, that this is why the Gemara tells the Brachos, Isura Mimimona Lo Yalfina. I can't necessarily, if I have a principle that's true in Dini Mamonos, But monetary law, I can extract from that to Isurim, because they're different areas of Torah, they have their own kinds of a style. Similarly, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yevamos, Daf Kuf Gimel, that Isur mituma lo yalfina. You can't learn from a halacha about tuma that suddenly I can extract from that a discussion relevant to the world of Isurim, because it's a different area. It's a different area. In that sense, even if we have familiarity with the world of Isurim, and even if we have familiarity with the world of Nezikin, so Isurim, we're learning a lot of Pesachim, that have to do with Isurim, what's Mutter, what's Asur, and Pesach. Those Makos deals a lot with, perhaps a little bit less so, but certainly Nezikin deals with Choshen Mishpat, Dini Mamanos. But the world of Tumma is a little bit of a unique kind of a limud. It's a little bit of a unique area of Halacha. For that reason, the Rambam wrote a Hakdama to Taros, and the Rambam wrote a Hakdama to Mishnah Taros, to the Mishnayos in Taros, where the Rambam explains and gives you a lot of the basic background. And the Rambam writes himself, the world of Taros is complicated. And to understand things, one really needs to know the basic principles, basic yesodos. He thinks to make it through, a person really has to be holding in his Hakdama, maybe the same way your person's holding in Kriya Shema, a person should be holding in the Hakdama to Taros. And that's because it's very important. It gets a little bit subtle. And that way, Taros is somewhat complicated at times. Chazal, at times, they speak about challenging the Sechtas, speak about Negayim Ve'olos. The Negayim Ve'olos, areas of Taros, are often perceived to be very complex because, again, the new area requires a lot of background knowledge, and some of that background knowledge can be very challenging. Shemi Shmuel and Parshas Miketz elaborates on this a lot. When the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph speaks about different sections of Gemara, of Zrayim, Moed, Nash, Mezik, and Kachim, and Taros, so it associates that with a pasuk, and each Seder is associated with a word. Taros is associated with the word Das. Taros is associated with the word knowledge, and Das, he points to the Yerushalmi, Das is a midah of being mafkin, of Havdalah, of differentiating between different things. Says the Shem Yishmuel, why is Taros related to Das? Because it requires real precision to understand the differences between different cases. It requires a real, thorough, nuanced, sophisticated knowledge to be able to make our way through. So we're going to be entering the world of Taros. It's a unique kind of a limud, unique kind of limud. It's its own area of Torah. Bein dam ladam, bein din ladin, bein nega la nega. And it's something which requires a good deal of background. It's interesting because as far as how you look at Taros, they're really two opposite perspectives. It's always the Hakdama about learning Taros. On the one hand, there are those that embrace a model where what makes Taros unique is that it's really not as relevant nowadays. That the world of Taros is like a pure kind of a Torah idea. A person's approaching it without making comparisons to what goes on in their regular day-to-day lives. A person can approach the world of Taros, and it's something which is very abstract and something which is very, very powerful. Rosenzweig, in the labeling's all messed up here, and one of the source number twos here, speaks of that based on the comment of the Yalkut Shimoni, that much as there's godless of Moshe Rabbeinu doing so many things practically in this world, like helping us get out of Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, there's a very, very high level malacha, Yoser Gedola, which is Kachim and Taros, a world which is not just practical, but a world which is really very, very abstract. At the same time, no one should think that the world of Taros is not halacha lemaisa at all. In a very famous comment, I don't know, very famous, it's overstating it, the Cheshek Shlomo, in the second parak, in the Seches Kalim, points out, he has a list where he says, don't think that Taros isn't relevant halacha lemaisa. I have a list of seven areas in halacha where it's important to be familiar with what comes up in Seder Taros. As an example, for a sukkah, if you want to know what's kosher schach, it's important to know what can be and can't be mekabel tuma. For netilas gadayim, we only wash netilas gadayim from a kli, have to learn mesachas kalim for that. And other achronim elaborate and mention more things that a person can learn halacha lemaisa beyond those seven, the Mishnah Taros and some others, point out to the world really seems to be, it is on some level potentially relevant halacha lemaisa. And of course, we daven that it be halacha lemaisa for, you know, tomorrow, that we be zocha to have to keep these halachas with binyan beis hamikdash. So that's just a bit of an introduction to the world of Taros. It's a new separate area of Torah. It's an area of Torah that requires Havdalah, Das, a certain sophistication, requires background the Rambam taught us. It's both abstract and not as relevant, but also at times we're able to derive a variety of halakhas that are relevant, and are relevant halakha lemaisa. Okay, that's a little bit of background. What I want to primarily talk about in the time that we have tonight is, again, it's somewhat of a machshava question, But I think it's an important introduction to understand a little bit about Taros. And as we'll see, there are Rishonim and Achronim that certainly connect this to ideas relevant to the Dinim of Taros. Let me begin as follows. In general, when we have Dinei D'Oraisa, the Gemara tells us, Mesech Sanhedrin, as well as Mesech Bav Metziah, we have Machlokas, whether we are Darshin and Taima Dekra or not Darshin and Taima Dekra. Do we try to understand? Do we paskin based on the reasoning that we seem to understand that's present in mitzvos, or do we not? Many Rishonim understand, says the Rambam, that even if we don't paskin based on the reasoning behind the mitzvos, it still is a worthwhile endeavor, whenever possible, to understand what's the reasoning and what's going on behind these mitzvos. In that sense, many Rishonim, many Bali Machshava, are very intrigued by the question, what is Tumah? What is Tumah? Is Tumah something which is real? Is it physical? Is it spiritual? Is it all a Gezeiras HaKasav? Can I understand these halachas? Can I not understand these halachas? Is it more of like a chok almost? What exactly is Tumah Vitara? What exactly, how are we to relate to it? What exactly is going on? What exactly is going on? So what we're going to try to do is to highlight two main mahalchim in Rishonim and Achronim. Within each mahalach, we'll deepen things a little bit to explain, understand what exactly is going on. The first mahalach is the mahalach of the Rambam. It's a mahalach of the Rambam which is somewhat already in Hilchos Mikvaos, in the way ends, when the Rambam begins the halacha by saying, Davar Barur V'Gulei, it is clear and obvious and revealed, Sha'atumas V'Ataros Gezeiras HaKasavim. These are Gezeiras HaKasavim. He does suggest Remez Yesh B'davar, like he does in Hilchosh about Shofar, but the Rambam opens by telling it's a Gezeiras HaKasav. What's behind this Gezeiras HaKasav? The Rambam, in a decently well-known section in Mor Nevuchim, in Chela Gimel Perek Mem Zayin of Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam offers the following suggestion. Says the Rambam, there's nothing real about Tumah Tara per se. There's no spiritual uncleanliness. We know, many of us may know, the Rambam in general rejected a lot of ideas that relate to like Shadim and Ayin Hara and things like that. This may relate to that a little bit. The Rambam says that in truth, nothing per se spiritually unclean about death, which generates a lot of Tumah at all. Says the Rambam, why do we have halachas that surround Tumah and Tara? It is all a question of inculcating within us an appreciation of the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. That the primary impact of halachas of Tumah v'Tara has to do with being able to go into the Mikdash. In that sense, very important to know, for the vast, vast majority of Rishonim, there's absolutely no Isser at all to become Tameh. You're allowed to become Tameh. There's no Isser to become Tameh. Kohanim have an Isser. Parshas Emor become Tameh Mace. But the average Yisrael has no Isser whatsoever. The only time that a Yisrael has to ever become Tahor, that's a Gemara. Rosh Hashanah, Chayv Adam L'Tahir Atzmo B'Regel, before the Shalosh Regalim, then a person has become Tahor. Why? B'Pashtus, I say that word specifically, B'Pashtus, the reason why a person has become Tahor before the Regel is because of the din of Aliyah L'Regel, that a person goes up to, based on Mikdash. It's really very much centered on the world of the base, on the world of the base on Mikdash. The Torah didn't want it to be that anybody could go to the Mikdash whenever they wanted. They wanted us to have an experience of Morim Mikdash. And because of that, there are specific halachas about when you are and when you're not allowed to go. It's not what the person stam will be able to go to. In many ways, it's a Gezeiras HaKasav established, not because there's a Metzias called Tumah, but there's a din, there's a halacha status called Tameh and Tahor. A Tameh person is not dirty. A Tameh person is not able to go to the Beis HaMikdash. That's the Rambam Shita. According to the Rambam, is there any logic behind the details of why certain things make you Tameh and certain things don't make you Tameh? Is there any logic behind the details as to why, let's say, death is what Rashi calls, at least, the Avi Avos HaTumah, the biggest form of Tumah? Why a dead animal often can generate a degree of Tumah. Is there any reason why those things are? So the first thing to know is the Rambam in general, when it comes to Tameh HaMitzvos, the Rambam maintains that Tameh HaMitzvos explain the broad idea behind the mitzvah. The Rambam does not think his Tameh HaMitzvos will explain the details behind mitzvos. Details, that's a different child. The Rambam thinks it it's valuable to explain the general idea, but details for that time will not work. If Hirsch somewhat famously expressed reservations about that, why wouldn't it explain the details? The details also. Rav Yaakov Ariel, who's the chief rabbi in Ramat Gan, so in his Sefer Al Torah, Me'ol HaTorah, on page 186, makes a suggestion even for Rambam. We know, as many to be shown and point out, that Tumah is bederek klal associated with a degree of death. The Kuzari writes that, a degree of death, either a dead body or a dead animal, but even some of the emissions of a person's body, like a keri or nida or zav or things like that, are often associated with something which had potential life force and it didn't actualize. Potential life force that didn't. A degree of almost like Misa. Point out with Yaakov Ariel that it may not be coincidental that the Beis HaMikdash is really the makor of all chayim. Beis HaMikdash is a place that represents life. Beis HaMikdash is the center of all of our spiritual life, and therefore it makes sense that a person who's encountered death wouldn't be able to go into the Mikdash, wouldn't be able to encounter Mikdash in that way. Be that as it may, the first general mahalach, the world of Tumah V'Tahara is mikdash focused. It's not a mitzias called spiritually dirty. Rather, it's a din, a halachic status the Torah created, so that people won't go to mikdash all the time. One suggestion would be because Tumah relates to death, and mikdash relates to that which is fully alive, and because of that reason, it makes sense those that encounter death shouldn't come to the world of the mikdash. That represents the center of our spiritual life. I believe the majority of Yisroel Ben Achronim argue about that. And the majority of Yisroel Ben Achronim maintain that Tumah is a mitzias, that Tumah is real, that Tumah is something which connotes a degree of spiritual uncleanliness, a degree of a metaphysical mitzias, which exists, that there's something impure. The same way, Mashal Mahadabar Domeh, there may be certain, like, again, for many of Yishonim, there may be something called like Shadim, or these sort of like spiritual forces that exist in the world. So Tumah is a degree of spiritual uncleanliness which exists. Who is in this camp? The Ramban is in this camp in many places. In his Perish Al HaTorah, the Ramban is in this camp. We'll see that the Or HaChaim is in this camp. Yehuda Levi and the Kuzari, Bipashtus, is in this camp. The Sfarno, and a very fascinating idea, is in this camp, but it does seem to be something which is very much real. What exactly is it? So, I have no idea, but at the same time, Rav Shimon Shkop in Shari Yosher, so Rav Shimon has a Ha'ara based on the Lashon of the Gemara in a bunch of different places, and many Rishonim HaForum, interestingly enough, relate to what Tumah is, to at times explain even some halacha. This is Shari Yosher, Gimel colon Ches, 3:8, Shimon Shkop and Shari Yosher. He points out that there may be a difference when the Gemara speaks about the world of Tumah. So the Gemara speaks about Tumah, Kifi Lashon HaShas V'HaMishnayis, based on the Lashon of Chazal, it sounds like Shu Inyan Nifrad, Shehu Nimsa B'Toch HaDavar HaNitva V'HaMetame. It seems like, said Rav Shimon, that there's something called Tumah, which is external, which enters an object. It's something external which enters an object. Chazal say, as an example, that Tumah can be ola v'yoredes. It can go in and out. It can go up and down. It's something, but it can expand in different directions. The Gemara says sometimes, shavala Tumah. It's like satiated or filled with Tumah. It's an external force which can enter something. Points out Rav Shimon, back to our chilek before, that is different than the realm of Isurim. In the realm of Isurim, it's something inherent in the object. So as an example, if you have an animal that dies, that was not shechted, that animal is called a nevela. That animal, called a nevela, is inherently usur. It's inherently usur. Something which is tameh is not inherently usur. There is something in it. There is something in it which is tameh. Why does that matter? So suggest, Rav Shimon, if you want to remove them, it's a little bit different. The world of Bittul in Tumah and Bittul in Isser may play itself out a little bit differently. Because in the realm of Isser, I have an object which is inherently Usser. So removing or altering the definition of that object may be, one could argue, more challenging or different. Because I have an animal which is treif, and I want to try to kosher that animal, that's very hard. But if it's something which is just external but present in an item, so again, we're talking now very broadly because it's a hakdama, but to get rid of that, that may be something which is a little bit different to get rid of tumah, because it's not part and parcel of the object itself. Because it's viewed as something which is real, a real spiritual kind of a force. So there is Rishonim that explain certain halachas about tumah and tara that based on the fact that tumah and tara, it's a real kind of a metzias. The Ramban does in the following way. If you learn those Gemaras and Mesachos Tzachim, so we'll encounter something called Tumas Ochlin. Tumas Ochlin, that seems to be a din in the Torah and in part the Shemini, that food has the ability to become Tamei. For food to become Tamei, so the food has to get wet. Mesachos Machshirin, Hechsher, Tumah, the food has to get wet. Has to get wet from certain kinds of liquids, has to get wet with a certain kind of kavana or ratzon. Those of you that learned Baba Basra last year, perhaps, on the Beis and Tosfos, so you'll think about that Tosfos, and there's a lot of discussion there about what exactly is going on. We, unfortunately, will not be talking about this year, but it is. We actually will be talking about it this year, so we're okay. Because we're talking about it right now, we'll think about it in a couple of weeks or so. But it requires a degree of ratzon. Says the Ramban, why does the food have to get wet? Why is it going to get wet? We'll think about this more, again, in I don't know, a month or so. But the reason why the food has to get wet, says the Ramban, is that the more that it's wet, the more it becomes susceptible, the more that there's going to be those forces of tumah are attracted to it. Again, if you live in a world which is like wildly rationalist, you know, in a certain kind of world, maybe hard to understand. In the world of the Rishonim that are mikubalim, believe in these kinds of things, in a very, very real way, so it makes it more susceptible when it gets wet. So now it's easier for it to transfer. It's easier for the transfer, which explains why mashkin liquids don't require any form of hechsher, because it's already wet. It already has a certain kind of access. We'll think of Rabbi Chanan in that a little bit of a different time. The Sfarno has a fascinating mahalach about the world of tumah, where he adds a little bit. The Sfarno is one of the great Rishonim who wrote on Chumash. So he wrote a sefer. I don't know if I should be embarrassed about this or not. I did not know the sefer existed until yesterday. It's called Kavanas HaTorah, written by the Sfarno. Apparently it's published in the standard Mikras Gedolos. Okay? And that's where some of the embarrassment comes. But I don't know. I asked someone today who I really trust, have you ever heard of the sefer? And he didn't, so I felt better about myself at that moment, because nothing makes you feel good like comparing yourself to others. Can't be that the trust. The Sfarno here in Kavanas HaTorah, in Perek Yudalit, it was sort of like a Hakdama to Chumash, in a certain sense. I don't know that much more of what's in it. It is not that long at all. Maybe over the weekend. But in Perek Yudgimel, it was put out by Rav Kuperman. Rav Kuperman was the head of Mechlala. He put out the Meshech Chachma. He put out a lot of very, very important Sfarim. I think his son put out the newer Netziv. Their family, they do Parshanun and Chumash very, very well. So here, the Sfarno has an amazing insight, which he claims explains a lot of what happens in Chumash, what happens here. It's like this. There are shadim in the world. There's something called Tumah, which is a real sort of a real metzias. It's a real reality. It's a ruach ha-tumah that a person can get. However, that Ruach HaTumah, says the Sfarno, again, we've shown him, it's not like some neo-Hasidic text from 12 years ago. It's a word, also be holy, but it's the Sfarno. The Sfarno says that there's a certain Reach HaTumah that becomes, is very attractive for Shadim and other Kofos Harab. It's like spiritual demons. It becomes very, very powerful for that. In general, Mishurim, we stick to more Halacha and Lumbis, but getting a little bit of, you know, just background here, says the Sfarno, because of that, he explains a couple of different things. Because the Shadim come, number one, the Shadim are most attracted to the most powerful form of death. The bigger the death is, the more the Shadim are attracted to go to. That's why Mace is Avi Avos HaTumah. He says, why can't you go to the Mikdash? He says, because the Mikdash represents Kedusha. If I go to the Mikdash, what am I bringing with me if I'm Tameh? I'm going to have all these shadim coming with me, which would be inappropriate to do in the Mikdash, and that's why you can't go to the Mikdash. Says the Sfarno in an absolutely wild line. He says, why are there gezeiras of tumas midrabanan? Chazal established a lot of different tumas, which are not tumas that existed midoraisa, But tumas on a derabbanan level, they are masadesh that certain things are tummy. You look at the Rambam's Hakdama to Taros, he elaborates on what tumas are derabbanan. Perhaps, as an example, tumas eretz ha'amim, that tumah of chutz la'aretz on some level, certain tumah related to non-Jews. There's a certain kind of tumah which exists, derabbanan were masadesh. Why were there Rabbanan Mechadesh that Tumah? Says the Sfarno. They were primarily Mechadesh during Bayashani. What was happening during Bayashani? Amnam, Gezeirah to Tumah Shmi Rabbanan, Rav Rubi Bayashani, Beheyos HaShedim Mitzuyim Eslam. That there was less Kedusha, and there were more Shedim in Bayashani, points out from the Gemara in a couple of places, and that's why there was a greater risk of Tumah during Bayashani, and they had to have Gezeirah to Rabbanan because there were a lot more shadim around connecting to a lot of different things. So Chazal established extra gezeiras of tumah to prevent that experience from taking place. Be that as it may, let's chazer what we spoke about thus far. We have another couple of minutes, and we'll try to just chazer and then add one or two final points. The world of tumah b'tah, rabbi dam adam, edinim b'negla nega, is a new area of Torah. Issumi tumah l'yalfinan, tumah l'yalfinan, has its own set of halachas, requires a degree of precision of knowledge of what's really going on, so says the Rambam, elaborate, shemish mimol, and parshas mikes. On the one hand, it's very abstract. On the other hand, Sheikh Shlomo points out, it can be halachah l'maisa as well. What is tumah? Again, just a little bit of background of what is tumah. The Rambam understands that tumah is more of a gezeirah sakasav, more of a gezeirah sakasav. The Ramban, the Sfarno, the Arachayim, and others understand that it's not really gezeirah sakasav, it's a mitzias. There's a real mitzias which exists in this world, which has the capacity, which is there, that mitzias of a metaphysical sort of ruach, hatumah, which is present, so it can spread in different ways. Rav Shimon tries to use this as a way of explaining how tumah is different than iser. Something which is tame, it's not inherent to part of the object. It's an external thing in the object, and iser is inherently aser, which impacts in the bittul question. It explains some of the halachas about tumas ochlen and the like. And for the Sfarno, it isn't only a ruach hatumah, it's ruach hatumah which attracts other kinds of kokos hara to be able to come and to be able to encounter. The last couple minutes, just to add, I guess, one kinesh. It seems pretty clear in Rishonim, and pretty clear in Rishonim, the Kuzari, if you know, Levi has this in Beis Kolon Samet, I think, is where Rav Yehuda Levi has it. You have this in a couple of other places also. The Sfarno seems to have this. Rav Zevin, in the state of the Orha Halacha, points out that Yosef Engel has it in a bunch of places, that this is so, it seems to be true, which is like this. The world of Kachim and the world of Tumah, that in many ways Tumah is the opposite of Kedusha. And the more that one finds Kedusha, the more that one finds the potential for Tumah. Zelu umazeh asa elokim. Asa elokim. That the more potential, so the more in the reverse also. Which they think fit with the second mahalach a little bit. That which has greater Kedusha, when an item loses that Kedusha, so then there's greater Tumah there. The loss is all the more powerful. This explains a couple of different things. A lot of Gemara, the Zevin used to explain, explains why Tumah for non-Jews is not as intense as Tumah for Jews. The Gemara tells us, as an example, that at least for certain days in the Gemara, if a Jewish person passes away, that creates Tumah's Ohel. That if a dead body, Rachman al-Tam, would be in the room right now, so Tumah's Ohel means if a dead body's here, anything on top, below, or in the same room becomes Tame also. So Tumas Ohel exists when it comes to Jews. Some days in the Gemara, with a non-Jew, the body may be Tame, may have Tumas Ohel. Why not? Because Jews have an extra degree of Kedusha, and because there's an extra degree of Kedusha, they also, in the reverse, have a certain extra degree of, have an extra element of Tumah. This, the Or HaChaim suggests, the Parshas Sukkos, explains the interesting thing about Karban Pesach. Once we're in the Pesachim mode, we'll try to connect things a little bit. But points out the Or HaChaim something a little bit interesting, which is as follows: When Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, when we left Mitzrayim, and Baruch Hu commanded us in Parshas Bo to bring a Karban Pesach, we were told that in Arel, someone who did not have Bris Milah should not bring a Karban Pesach, as well as a non-Jew, a Ben Nechar, also should not bring a Karban Pesach. We left Mitzrayim. We left Mitzrayim, part of the Or HaChaim. There's no tzivoy at all that a tummy person can't bring a Karban Pesach. We left Mitzrayim, there's no tzivoy at all that a person who's tummy can't bring a Karban Pesach. Why is that so? Suggest the Or HaChaim that the world of Tumah, when we left Mitzrayim, it was still Kodem Matan Torah. We were still not yet fully with Kedushas Yisrael, what we got in Maimon Har Sinai. only when we really became Jews, full Jews, and Maamid Har Sinai was full Jewish Israel. So then the dinim of Tumah started to kick in a more intense way. Because the more that we have Kedusha, the more we are susceptible, the more that there's a possibility of Tumah. Because we left Mitzrayim, we were not yet there with levels of Kedusha, there was no Isser to be Tumah, Bizman Pesach Mitzrayim. Bizman Pesach Mitzrayim. When you learn Pesachim in the 5th to the 8th or 9th Prakim, and you learn about Karim Pesach, especially when it's related to Pesach Mitzrayim, so keep this Mar Makom in mind. Be that as it may, tonight was a bit of a Hakdama, both Hakdama as far as the limud of Taros and a Hakdama as far as some of the Machshava. Ezra Hashem, next week we'll start shifting towards some of the regular sugyas in the world of Taros that are relevant, helpful, and Ezra Hashem Nether next week, that are relevant and helpful, but hopefully a good, again, introduction. Have a wonderful rest of your night. We spoke tonight.